Chapter 1. Planning the Voyage. Call me Ishmael. Some years ago, it isn't important exactly when, I had very little money and nothing to do, so I decided to sail around the world. Traveling makes me feel healthy. Whenever I feel sad, whenever it feels like a damp, rainy November in my soul, I know it's time to get to sea as soon as possible. Now, when I say that I am in the habit of going to sea whenever this bad mood occurs, I do not mean to say that I ever go as a passenger. To go as a passenger means you must have a purse, and a purse is no good unless you have something in it. Besides, passengers get seasick. They fight with each other. They don't sleep well at night and do not enjoy themselves very much. No, I never go as a passenger. I always go to sea as a sailor, especially because I am paid for it. Passengers are never paid a single penny that I have ever heard of. Another reason I go to sea as a sailor is for the healthy exercise and the clean air around me. The most important of my reasons for going to sea, however, is the incredible idea of the great whale itself. Such an important and mysterious monster makes me extremely curious. The wild and distant seas where this gigantic creature swims, I am tormented with a constant desire for these faraway places. I love to sail in dangerous seas and land on wild coasts. For all these reasons, the whaling voyage was very exciting. I packed a shirt or two and an extra pair of trousers into my old suitcase and went to New Bedford in Massachusetts. It was a Saturday night in December when I arrived. I was disappointed at the news that I had missed the last ferry to Nantucket Island, the place where the most important and best whaling ships departed from. Since there would not be another boat to that famous old island until Monday, I had a night, a day, and still another night to spend in New Bedford. Finding a place to eat and sleep soon became a serious concern. It was a very dark and dismal night, bitterly cold and cheerless, and I knew no one in the place. With slow steps I walked up and down the streets, looking for accommodation. I passed a few inns that looked too expensive. Then, at last, I saw a dim light not far from the docks, and, looking up, saw a sign over the door with the name The Spouter Inn, Peter Coffin. It seemed a rather ominous name to me. Spouter? Coffin? Coffins are for dead people, but it's a common name in Nantucket. It seemed an odd sort of place, but it didn't look expensive, so I went in. As I entered, I found a group of young seamen sitting around a table. I looked for the landlord and told him I wanted a room. He told me that his inn was full. There wasn't a bed unoccupied. But look, if you have no objections to sharing a room with another sailor, you can stay here. If you're going sailing, you'll have to get used to that sort of thing. I told him that I never liked to sleep two in a bed, that if I did, it would depend completely on who the harpooner might be, but if he, the landlord, had no other room for me, and the harpooner wasn't horrible, I would put up with sharing the room. "I thought so," said the landlord. "All right, take a seat. Supper? You want supper? Supper will be ready directly." After a while, four or five of us men went to supper in the room next door. It was as cold as Iceland. No fire at all. The landlord said he couldn't afford it. We had to button up our jackets and hold cups of boiling tea with our freezing fingers. There was a lot of food, though. Not only meat and potatoes, but dessert, too. It was now about 9 p.m., and I wanted to go up to my room. No man likes to sleep two in a bed. And when it comes to sleeping with an unknown stranger, in a strange inn, in a strange town, and that stranger is a harpooner, then your objections multiply.
The more I thought about this harpooner, the more I hated the idea of sleeping with him. It was fair to presume that, being a harpooner, his clothes would not be the cleanest, and certainly not the finest. I began to shake all over. "What kind of man is this?" I asked the landlord. It was now 12 midnight, and he hadn't returned.
"Generally, he's an early bird," said the landlord. "But tonight, he went out to sell his head."
"Sell his head?" I asked. "Are you telling me this man is actually trying to sell his head around the town?"
"That's precisely it," replied the landlord. "But I told him he couldn't sell it here. The market's overstocked."
"With what?" I shouted.
"With heads, to be sure." "Aren't there too many heads in this world?" the landlord replied.
"Landlord," I said, "you must stop teasing me. Who and what is this harpooner?"
"Well, this harpooner has just arrived from the South Seas, from New Zealand, where he bought a lot of embalmed human heads to sell here. He's not a dangerous man," the landlord told me.
I was so exhausted that, despite my fears, I decided to go upstairs to my room. I had just managed to fall asleep when I was awakened by the sound of heavy footsteps entering the room. "Lord save me," I thought, as a tall, dark-skinned man walked into the room, holding a New Zealand head. At first, I couldn't see his face. Then suddenly, he turned round. What a sight! Such a face! It was dark purple in color, with some yellow parts, completely covered in tattoos. I had never seen a face like that before. Ignorance is the parent of fear, and I was so afraid of him that I didn't have the courage to say anything. He began to get undressed. I saw the same colored tattoos covering his arms and chest. He didn't see me, however, and when he got into bed, he suddenly felt me lying there next to him.
"Who the devil are you?"
he said.
"You no speak, I kill you."
He grabbed his tomahawk and began waving it at me.
"Landlord! Landlord! Peter Coffin, help me!"
I screamed as I jumped out of the bed.
"Speak ye, tell ye me who you are,"
shouted the cannibal, again waving his tomahawk in the air. At that moment, thank God, the landlord came into the room carrying a light.
"Don't be afraid now," the landlord said with a laugh. "Queequeg won't hurt a hair on your head."
"Stop laughing," I yelled. "Why didn't you tell me that my roommate was a cannibal?"
"I thought you'd have known, once I told you he was walking around the town selling heads."
He turned to Queequeg, the cannibal, and said,
"Do you understand this man sleeps with you? Understand?"
"I understand plenty," said Queequeg,
who was smoking a pipe and sitting in the bed.
"You get in,"
Queequeg said, motioning me to the bed with his tomahawk and throwing his clothes to one side. He did this in a very civil way. He was also really kind and charitable. I looked at him for a moment. For all his tattoos, he was, on the whole, a clean, decent-looking cannibal. "What's all this fuss I've been making?" I thought to myself. "The man's a human being, just as I am. He has just as much reason to fear me as I have to be afraid of him. Better to sleep with a sober cannibal than a drunken Christian." I got into bed, turned over, and never slept better in my life. When I woke up in the morning, Queequeg was still sleeping. I felt trapped in the bed. If I moved, he would wake up. I had to get up, however. So I tried to shake him. "Queequeg!" But his only response was a snore. I kept calling his name and moving my arms and legs until finally he woke up. He rubbed his eyes and looked at me, as if he didn't completely remember how I came to be there. When at last he understood the situation, he got out of bed quickly and, using gestures in a kind of sign language, made me understand that he would dress first and then leave me to dress in private. He is treating me with great respect, I thought, while I have been rudely staring at him. You don't find a man as polite and respectful as Queequeg every day. I decided this was going to be a very interesting voyage. Later, I decided to take a walk around the town of New Bedford. The night before, seeing a man like Queequeg, with tattoos from head to toe and dressed in strange clothes, had been astonishing. But that was only the beginning of astonishing sights in this seaside city. There were people from all around the world. Mediterranean mariners whistled at frightened ladies. Sailors from Malaysia and Bombay walked the streets, and actual cannibals stood chatting at street corners. All of this made a stranger like me stare. But New Bedford isn't just famous for its people. It's famous for whales. Had it not been for whalemen like myself, New Bedford might have been forgotten. But thanks to whale hunting, thanks to the quest for precious whale oil, it was a very important and expensive place to live. New Bedford also has a chapel, a whaleman's chapel. All men who are planning to go whale hunting make a Sunday visit to the chapel. After returning from my morning walk, I again went out, this time to go to a sermon. I saw a small group of sailors, sailors' wives, and their widows sitting in the church. The chaplain had not yet arrived, but there was silence everywhere. Everyone was waiting for Father Mapple, who had once been a sailor and a harpooner himself. I sat next to the door and was surprised to see Queequeg near me. The pulpit was the strangest I had ever seen. It was very high, like most pulpits, but instead of having a wooden ladder to get to the top, there was one made of rope, just like those you find on a ship. When Father Mapple arrived, he grabbed the rope and, climbing hand over hand, went straight up into the pulpit of his ship. Father Mapple started his sermon. It was all about Jonah and how he was swallowed by a whale. I understood why he was telling us the story, but it frightened me quite a lot. After the sermon, I returned to the Spouter Inn and found Queequeg there, sitting on a bench by the fire, whittling on his little wooden idol and humming to himself in his devilish way. I sat watching him with much interest. Even though he was a savage, with his face ruined, at least to my taste, by his tattoos, he had an agreeable, friendly appearance. You cannot hide the soul. Despite all his pagan tattoos, I thought I saw the traces of a simple, honest heart. He looked courageous and honest. Perhaps it is ridiculous, but his face reminded me of George Washington. He was George Washington turned into a cannibal. I sat down with him, and we tried to talk as best we could about all the sights to see in New Bedford. I began to feel the warmth of a new friendship. And even though a man of my closed, reserved world would have thought it too soon to become friends, with this man, those old rules did not apply. Queequeg told me about himself. He was from an island in the South Pacific, an island far away to the west and south. His father was a high chief, a king. His uncle, a high priest. His mother and his aunts were related to noble warriors. There was royal blood in his veins. He wasn't interested in being a king, however. He wanted adventure. He wanted to be a whaler and visit Christian lands. He didn't want to be a Christian, though. He had learned they could be just as bad as the people they tried to convert.